This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 11th of July, 2025. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. May I introduce our readers for this week? Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Peter Lydiard. Now, some of you may be aware that we have been experiencing some technical issues with recording and dispatching of our recordings in recent weeks. Well, we have now bought a new computer and a new Wi-Fi system. And this is the first time that the new equipment will have been used for a proper recording. Hopefully all will go well, but in case it doesn't, please bear with us while we stabilise the new systems. So on to our usual regular notices. First is to say, if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861229. That is 01962 861229. This number can also be found on the key fob attached to your memory stick. As you listen to the recording, remember you can use the buttons on your box to move on from one item before it finishes or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen to them again. Those of you with computers or tablets, apart from using the memory stick in the box provided, you can load it onto your own device. You can usually also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Once again, there has been delays in getting the recording onto the website. Hopefully, we will get over that problem now. You can also listen to the recording on Awaz Radio on the DAB channel. That's Saturday at 5 p.m. So, on with our usual headline stories. Heather, what is your headline story, please?
Council tax arrears hit an eye-watering £7.1 million. Council tax arrears in Winchester have reached £7.1 million. Figures released by the Ministry of Housing, Communities and Local Government indicate the mounting debt in the locality. This forms part of a national debt of £6.6 billion. The substantial local figure points to the impact of the ongoing cost of living pressures in worsening the arrears in Winchester District. The Free Independent Debt Advice Service, National Debt Line, has urged individuals anxious about their council tax bill to seek advice promptly. The increasing reliance on council tax revenue to fund essential services such as social care, local schools and rubbish collections has resulted in higher bills overall, forming a vicious cycle for many struggling to pay. According to National Debt Line, one quarter of those seeking advice have council tax debt. This averages nearly £2,000 per person, making it one of the top three common debts that advisers frequently encounter. Research from Money Advice Trust suggests that by March 2025, 2.2 million people in England, and that's 5% of us, were behind on their council tax bill. This indicates that many more could be struggling with council tax arrears, but have not yet sought help. Steve Vade, Chief Executive at Money Advice Trust, the charity that runs National Debt Line, said, "Unless changes are made at policy level, arrears are likely to keep climbing. At National Debt Line, we are calling for improved collection practices, as well as greater investment in council tax support schemes, to prevent people falling behind in the first place. Under current rules, households can become liable for their full annual council tax bill if they miss one payment. And this often results in a quick escalation to bailiff action. The government recently sent out proposals to extend this period, allowing people more time to engage and seek support. Millions of council tax debts are passed to bailiffs each year. Mr. Bates said, "Unwaveringly high arrears levels in Winchester and across England underline the need for urgent action. Every day at National Debtline, we see how council tax continues to be one of the most common debts people face. Councils have a vital role in helping residents with unmanageable bills, and to ensure council tax, crucial to funding local services, is collected in a way that is fair and affordable." Winchester City Council says it encouraged residents struggling with their household bills to contact the council.
Thank you, Heather. Noel, your headline story, please.
Care centre closure protest is planned. Hundreds of people are expected to protest against the planned closure of a dementia daycare centre. Campaigners and residents will gather in Castle Avenue, Winchester, outside Hampshire County Council offices on Saturday, July the 12th at 10:30 a.m. to protest against the County Council's planned closure of the Chesil Lodge Daycare Centre. The centre provides essential care services for older adults, including those with dementia and long-term health conditions. It also offers crucial respite for family carers. Campaigners say that without this support, carers may become overwhelmed, potentially forcing loved ones into residential care. The protest is expected to be attended by hundreds, including Lib Dem MP Danny Chambers. The campaigners launched a petition which has garnered more than 600 signatures. Councillor Paula Ferguson, who represents the division where Chesil Lodge is located, said, "The County Council argues that closing Chesil Lodge is only a small cut, but for the families who depend on it, the impact will be devastating. It is simply wrong to try and balance the books on the backs of the most vulnerable." A meeting with the council has been requested by the MP to discuss the matter, but it has yet to be agreed upon by the council. Raising the issue in Parliament during a speech on dementia care, Dr. Chambers said, "The financial pressures on local authorities, driven in large part by adult social care, are among the most urgent political challenges of this decade. The Hampshire County Council is making a raft of cuts, which it hopes will contribute approximately £9.9 million towards balancing the budget." A County Council spokesperson said, "It's important to restate that there is no recommendation to close Chesil Lodge and that the individuals currently using the day service would continue to do so at the same level. The recommendations propose an alternative provider is found to deliver services at Chesil Lodge in Winchester and Newman Court in Basingstoke to support a wider range of needs within the local population and to increase charges for the daycare services provided at both sites to bring them into line with the average market rate. Those attending would contribute to the cost based on the usual adult social care financial assessment. No final decisions have been made in relation to these recommendations. All proposals will be considered at the County Council's Cabinet meeting on Friday, July the 18th.
Thank you, Noel. Jane, your headline story?
And that is celebrating the city's history and heritage. A coffee morning for Winchester's history lovers was hosted at Rick Stein to discuss the start of the Winchester Heritage Open Days upcoming festival. This year's festival takes place from Friday, September the 12th to Sunday, September the 21st, offering a variety of talks and tours for people of all ages. Visitors of the coffee morning consisted of trustees, volunteers and members of the public as well, and the Winchester's mayor, Councillor Sudhakar Achwal, who all came to show their support for the upcoming event. Over coffee, tea and various sweet treats on Thursday, July the 3rd, people keen to stir interest in Hampshire's history mingled to talk about the festival and its significance. Councillor Achwal said, Gatherings like this are impossible, so a big hand to the organisers. It's not just a festival opening houses and museums. These properties are a link to the past, not just bricks and mortar, but the depository of our memories telling us how we have come to this point. Having open days like these instills pride in society. People aren't just coming to see the houses, they're coming to see the surroundings, and there is a tremendous commerce that comes from these events. We have to demonstrate our history to visitors. Hampshire History Trust aim to connect as many people as possible through Hampshire history and heritage with as many as 200 events organised in and around Winchester every year. Every event is free of charge. However, certain events will be ticketed away as a way of controlling numbers due to popularity increasing every year. Chair of the Hampshire History Trust, Liz King, said, "I'd like to thank all our supporters, whether that's trustees, patrons, sponsors or volunteers. If it wasn't for them, we would come to a grinding halt. If we achieve a successful festival this year, we think that's a challenge enough. We want to take the festival and run it on a bigger scale by using its blueprint and taking it out of Winchester and into other cities. This year we have made a huge amount of effort to get local architects involved, which has been hugely successful." Trustee Mark Page said, "I was surprised by the number of people that turned up last year. There were thousands. I know it's free, but that's not why people turn up. They're genuinely interested in the heritage. Some of the things you get access to from open days, you wouldn't be able to see otherwise." And this is accompanied by a couple of photos of the mayor of Winchester with the trustee chair, Liz King, and several photos are from the previous year of people enjoying their visits around Winchester.
Thank you, Jane. My headline story is Schools to Go Smartphone Free for 2026. Crackdown campaign sees over 100 uniting in support. A campaign to free young children from the grip of smartphones is gathering support across Hampshire. A total of 109 primary schools across the county have announced that they will become smartphone free from January 2026. These include several in Winchester, including Week. The others will be revealed on Friday, July the 11th, that's today. Well, the initiative has been led by Smartphone Free Childhood founding partner Claire Fernhuff, and she's pictured here as well. She's working with a group of head teachers across the county. It marks what the group has called a significant cultural shift in the fight against the growing impact of smartphone and social media use on children's well-being. An additional 31 schools will join the initiative from September 2026, taking the total number of schools to 140. School leaders and MPs across the county have voiced their support for the scheme, including Kit Malthouse MP, who has joined forces with the campaigners to support the move to make Hampshire smartphone free. And then there is a long list of schools which are joining in, and I won't go through all of those, but so carrying on. This is a significant moment for Hampshire school children, says Claire. The average age a child receives their own smartphone is now around 9, so it's essential that primary schools lead the way on tackling this issue. Making schools completely smartphone free gives children a break from the relentless burden of social media and allows them at least 6 hours a day to focus, interact and enjoy their precious school years. Jonathan Kirkham, head of Week Primary School, said, "In the last decade, I've noticed a steady increase in problems linked to smartphones and social media. I want my children to be safe when they come to school." Kit Malthouse, the Conservative MP for North West Hampshire, said, "I've heard sobering accounts of children not just being distracted by their phones, but experiencing anxiety, serious mental health struggles, and even suicidal thoughts. I recently met representatives from Hampshire County Council and will continue to engage with head teachers to put in place practical steps to achieve this vision." Right, we now go on to the death notices, starting with Heather, please.
Clarkson, Angela Clarkson, at Brendan Care St Giles View on the 24th of June, aged 92.
Dabbs, David Leslie Dabbs, 16th of June, aged 63.
Finlayson, Marguerite Louis Peggy Finlayson, peacefully at home the 28th of June, aged 92.
George Linda Pauline George, 25th of June, aged 82.
Haddock, Olive Haddock, peacefully at St Giles View, aged 93.
Holland, Clive Holland, on the 24th of June, aged 72.
Knight, Frank Knight, peacefully at Winchester Hospice, the 3rd of June, aged 91.
Matthews, Brian Matthews, peacefully, 24th of June, aged 88.
Mears, David John Mears, known as Joe, peacefully at Mary Rose Nursing Home, Portsmouth, on the 24th of June, aged 83.
Reed, Carol Judith Mary Reed, peacefully at Winchester Hospice, 23rd of June, aged 81.
A Raphael Gary Robert Raphael at Winchester Hospice, 29th of June, aged 79.
Thank you. Now we go on to Christian comment, read by Jane, please.
And here we have Choosing a Wilderness Experience. I hope you will get some holiday this summer. A change of scene, some time in nature, perhaps even some kind of wilderness experience. That kind of holiday is increasingly popular. To go and camp in the desert, to go and sleep deep in the forest, to visit remote islands. It might seem paradoxical that some of us choose this kind of holiday. If someone pushed us into a wilderness experience, we might recoil. Scripture holds this tension. The wilderness is a place of exile, a place where we are not at home, a barrier through which we need to pass if we are to come home to the promised land. Yet, it is also a place we must be willing to visit if we are to know God. Wilderness experiences are part of the human condition, even if we do not choose them. Each of us at some time in our lives will find ourselves feeling isolated, far from home, in a place where we feel that we have nothing. That is what is characteristic of the wilderness. There's nothing there, or at least nothing that's familiar, nothing we want. Not only is the space empty, it is actually desolate, abandoned. In the New Testament, the great man of the wilderness is John the Baptist. John must have had moments of isolation and even desolation living in the harsh desert conditions on the western edge of the modern-day Jordan, while God's people were living under the Romans' client King Herod. But John's story reminds us that the wilderness is not a place which is lacking in hope. While it may be true that there's nothing there with you, it's not true that there's no one there with you. Wherever we go, God is with us. It is in the wilderness that John begins preparing the way for Jesus and is able to grasp his unique power. That is one reason why we might actually seek out a wilderness experience. The wilderness may be the best place to meet God. There's nothing to distract us, nothing to make an idol of. There's no smartphone, no football, no house to be proud of. It's just us and God. Perhaps, however, that sounds rather alarming. The writer Harry Williams said that the most terrifying verse in the Bible is John 16:13, "When the Spirit of truth is come, he will guide you into all truth." What could be scarier than that? Williams asked with a twinkle in his eye. But really, the stripping away of comforting falsehoods is a healthy process, even if an unsettling one. It makes us stronger and more honest people. To be brought closer to God is to be reminded that, above all else, we are loved. No identity matters more than that we are beloved children of God. And perhaps, in the end, the only person who can fully grasp that is the one who has been in the wilderness with God. And that was from the Reverend Philip Crinks.
Thank you, Jane. Now we go on to letters to the editor, starting with Heather, please.
Rupert Pitt is irritated. The Hampshire Chronicle can deeply irritate. Do we really need to know about who has been banned from driving, who the new estate agents are, and if they had a bumper year? That said, the issue of June the 26th, pages 28 and 29 on the M3 Junction 9, was outstanding. A must read. Two whole pages is just what was needed to cover this grotesque scheme. It could have been broken down into paragraphs. Phil Gaggs from Winack paragraph on the lack of sound finance underlining the scheme was excellent, but a little complicated. Chris Gillam, as ever, should have made into simpler paragraphs, possibly, and reveals the Department of Transport said they had looked at alternatives to the junction, but could not find the documentation. This is a disgrace, in short. The DfD had not done any work and were secretive. Malcolm Wallace, himself an engineer, pointed out that the engineering costs have risen substantially in recent years, and the costs are likely to exceed the £200 million quoted. We should recall what the conservative philosopher Roger Scruton said about roads and traffic. We are familiar with the ruin caused by roads, the ruin of towns, villages, wildlife and countryside. Worse, however, is their capacity to destroy. Roads enable people to live in one place, work in another, rear children in a third, take their leisure in a fourth. Roads scatter the population, destroying home and community, and placing a veil before our purposes, which can only be filled after a frenzied burst of motion to another place. Roads are therefore a major cause of man's estrangement from his fellow man. Under their influence, he lives subject to the illusion that he can be satisfied in some other place. Rupert Pitt, St. Cross Road, Winchester.
Thank you, Heather. Noel, please.
Dr. Martin Burton writes about chalk rivers. We are writing to ask your readers to conserve water this summer in order to protect our precious chalk rivers, the Itchen and the Test, from damage by a looming drought. These rivers are fed by groundwater stored in the underlying chalk aquifer, which is in turn fed by rainfall during the autumn, winter and spring. The chalk aquifer can be visualised as a bucket with holes feeding the Itchen and the Test. These vital flows from the groundwater reserve sustain the rich and varied aquatic life that make these unique chalk rivers internationally famous. Abstractions for potable water from the chalk aquifer at Lasham, Totford, Easton, Twyford and Otterbourne add more holes and further reduce the quantity remaining in the bucket. We're asking Hampshire residents to be careful with their water use now in order to keep water in the bucket, chalk aquifer, to avoid harmful low flows in July, August and September. Low flows in this period adversely impact the aquatic life in the rivers. Water temperatures rise, resulting in reduced oxygen levels for fish and invertebrates. At water temperatures above 19 degrees centigrade, fish die. Pollution concentrations increase with less dilation, and Atlantic salmon, an endangered species, are deterred from returning to the Itchen and Test to spawn. We've had a very dry spring, the driest for over 100 years, according to the Met Office. As a citizen science group, we track the cumulative total rainfall falling each year between September the 1st and May the 31st, the wet season. This year, the cumulative rainfall during this period was 725 millimetres, using data from the Environmental Agency rain gauge at Bishop Sutton in the Itchen headwaters. In the last drought year of 2022, the figure was 581 millimetres. In 2023 and 2024, the figures were 1,030 millimetres and 1,060 millimetres, respectively, so we are well below these no-problem years. Southern Water have been proactive in sending a message to its customers asking them to conserve water now. As a group dedicated to protecting our chalk rivers, we strongly support this request and hope that we can all do our bit to protect our iconic rivers. Measures people can take include not using hose pipes, not watering the lawn, grass is very resilient, water plants in the evening, use bath water for flushing toilets, take a shower instead of a bath. And that was from Dr. Martin Burton on behalf of the Upper Itchen Restoration Community Interest Company, Itchinstoke, Alsford.
Thank you, Noel. Jane, please.
And Andrew Rutter writes, a speed warning to drivers after footballer killed in car crash. The very tragic accident to a Liverpool player, Diogo Jota, can be blamed on speed. It is reported that he was trying to catch a sailing on the ferry that replaced a cancelled flight and lost control. I too suffered a front tyre blowout in Africa and am lucky to be alive. The difference was speed, and I didn't lose control, but it was a near-run thing that shook me up. Let this be a warning to drivers. And it's accompanied by a photo of the late Diogo Jota looking very happy. I think he must have just had a goal or something, with Trent Alexander-Arnold with his arms around him from behind. And that was Andrew Rutter, St John's Road, Winchester.
Thank you, Jane. Right, my first letter is written by Alan Taylor, and it's headed Get Tested. Several years ago, I couldn't understand why my brother had changed in some way that, and not drinking his favourite tipple, he seemed subdued and different. 3 months later, he told me that he'd been diagnosed with advanced prostate cancer, the cancer having spread to his lower ribs. It's still touch and go, but if only he'd taken a test earlier, he wouldn't be on a 3 month chemo regime. Another friend had attended a PSA testing event at Albion Place in Southampton. He tested positive and was able to start corrective treatment within 2 months. One out of three men with raised PSA level will have cancer. If you have a chance of being tested sooner rather than later, why wouldn't you? Prostate Cancer Support Organisation, in association with Hampshire and the Isle of Wight Freemasons, are hosting a PSA blood test event for men aged between 50 and 80 on Saturday, July the 19th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at St Mary's Stadium, Britannia Road, Southampton. We recommend that every man over 50 or over 40 who has a family history of prostate cancer or of black ethnicity, can't say that word, if you know your PSA, you know where you're going. But it's by appointment only, so I won't bother to read that bit out because it's already happening by the time you listen to this. The letter goes on, a man dies every hour of prostate cancer in the UK. And then at the bottom it says, we do not charge for this service, donations are welcome to defray costs. And PSA stands for Prostate Specific Antigen, an indicator of prostate health. A small blood sample is taken from a vein in the arm. You will be informed of the result in 5 to 10 days' time. This is written by Alan Naylor, South Central Area Chairman, Hampshire and Isle of Wight Freemasons, Romsey. Heather, please.
Now we have the Chris Gillam, who was referred to in the letter I read previously, also telling us about this road scheme. Sloppiness. Phil Gagg is right to draw attention to the sloppiness of the economic analysis of the M3 J9 scheme by National Highways on the Chronicle Letters of July the 3rd. If anything, however, he pulls his punches, because not only is the National Highways wrong on its own specific terms of reference, but everything about the economic appraisal of road schemes in the United Kingdom is falsifiable. Its basic data, its phony science, its basic assumptions, especially its ludicrous aggregation of billions of unevidenced microscopic economic guesses into a macroscopic assertion. Its circularity, it assumes a benefit in proving a benefit, and above all, its complete failure ever to demonstrate that its macroscopic conclusions stand up to any sort of empirical reality. The Department for Transport has never researched the matter, and therefore has never shown that building roads benefits the economy of the nation. Worse, when it is confronted with the statistical observation that road building correlates downstream with declining GDP, it has simply ignored the observation rather than countered it. The central fiction of road scheme evaluation is that it measures the difference in costs to the nation between building something and not building it, what it calls the willingness to pay of the road users. The problem is that National Highways use computers only the... The problem is that National Highway computers only... Third time lucky, I'm so sorry. The central fiction of road scheme evaluation... I've read that bit. The problem is that National Highways computes only the user costs, but the users are not those who pay most of the costs. The true costs are largely paid elsewhere. The externalities, pollution, policing, accidents, climate damage, non-renewable resource consumption, inefficient use of space, etc., and are known to exceed the total tax and duty take on the activity by a factor of at least three. Nobody ever calculates the cost to the nation of these externalities, though with the recent heatwave in Europe, we are beginning to hear about the economic costs of human-made climate change. Because the Department for Transport has always kept rail and road infrastructure and capital and revenue in separate silos, it has never sought to optimise the transport disposition of the nation. So we have an agency like National Highways, which functions primarily to justify its own existence. Unsurprisingly, therefore, it invents an economic mythology to justify this. The pity is that nobody in government ever has the honesty to question it. Chris Gillam, Upper High Street, Winchester.
And Brian Scott, whose heading is Madness. The diversion of the Andover Road through the new estate is the height of madness, and it seems the council has painted itself themselves into a corner that they find difficult to escape from. Could some way be found that they could escape from without losing face? It is so demonstrably wrong, as any crash and blockage on the A34 proves. Brian Scott, Southgate Street, Winchester.
Thank you, Noel. Jane, please.
And Duncan Hodgson writes, unable to cope. Another year, and it seems another heat wave is upon us here in the south. This has started to become a recurring theme, and yet our infrastructure is not able to cope, and we must have a long, hard look at adapting British infrastructure and houses to cope with warm, tropical climate of the future. Otherwise, I will be wishing I was back in rainy Scotland. And that was from Duncan Hodgson, Dakota Way, Eastleigh.
Thank you, Jane. My letter is written by Derek Newland, who's the CEO and Artistic Director of Played the Crowd at the Theatre Royal Winchester. And it's headed Hat Fair Thanks. All of us here at Played to the Crowd, the arts and education charity behind Theatre Royal Winchester and Hat Fair, want to say a big thank you to everyone who poured into Winchester on Saturday to make Hat Fair 2025 such a joyous and fun-filled event. Luckily, the rain just drizzled a bit at the start and saved its pouring for the Sunday. Hat Fair was a smaller one-day festival this year, but I hope you will agree it still delivered its promise of bringing quirky and fun a traditional hatters from across the world, as well as curating a sample of the best national and international contemporary outdoor arts performers, All this sitting alongside our brilliant and diverse local talent and community performers. By the end of the afternoon, the sun was shining and the mood was equally sunny, with the public saying things like, "Such a brilliant festival this year." It was a fantastic experience visiting Winchester and seeing local and international talent in this beautiful city. Hat Fair is such a crowd pleaser, and we're sure all the businesses in the city centre must appreciate the extra footfall. Such a great event for all ages. For play to the crowd, Hat Fair is a key part of our brand and our purpose to delight and unite our communities. It is a special event which has been running for more than 20 years. However, a big free festival like this is in the middle of a historic city is expensive, and the responsibility to run it safely and professionally is something we take very seriously and is very much required of us these days. A very different picture to when the festival began. It also takes well over a year to plan for and to select and secure artists. Given the challenges and uncertainties of public investment at the moment, we have decided to take the strategic decision to have a fallow year in 2026 before returning with a bang on Saturday the 3rd July 2027. So get that in your diaries now. This pause with a purpose, as we are describing it, is to enable us to breathe, step back and review all elements of the festival, making further efficiencies if we can. It will also allow us time to see how the local authority landscape emerges, allow our new elected mayor to become a reality. Arts Council England's review will have been completed, and we will seek a broader range of partners to secure the future of the Hat Fair, not only for 2027, but for the next 50 years too. Without multi-year investment security from agencies such as Arts Council England or local authorities, it is very hard and very risky for our charity's survival to book artists and commit resources we don't yet have. So, I want to make a direct ask of the people of Winchester and beyond. We are actively looking for philanthropists, benefactors and investors to partner with us to secure the future of Hat Fair. It costs £250,000 a year to run a full 3-day Hat Fair, and all the year-round community engagement and artist commissioning work that happens in the background to make the Hat Fair what it is. We know there are people in the city who are relatively well off and would love the Hat Fair. Now is the moment to make a difference. Please contact me directly at derek@playtothecrowd.co.uk if you'd like to make a sizeable annual contribution and play your part in sustaining future festivals. Of course, we welcome all levels of support, and there are many other ways you can get behind Play to the Crowd, including a wonderful prize draw on Crowdfunder at the moment, with the top prize of a holiday to the guaranteed sun of Malta, thanks to our Hat Fair strategic partner, Kuoni. The website is crowdfunder.co.uk/p/playtothecrowd2025. So check out the support page for the playtothecrowd.co.uk for all other ways that you can help too. Thank you so much once again for all the love so many of you have for the Hat Fair. We feel it, we share it. That was written by Derek Newland, who's the CEO and Artistic Director of Play to the Crowd, Theatre Royal, Winchester. Now, that's the end of the letters. If you have an opinion or a subject you would like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, or you can contact them on 01962 860836. That is 01962 860836. Or email them news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now we go on to editorial comment read by Noel, please.
Right, and the heading is "Hoping to see a phone cultural shift." Would it not be wonderful if the smartphone campaign highlighted on our front page really was a significant cultural shift? It would be an important victory in the battle against those strange men such as Elon Musk, who, it is now clear, really do want to take over the world, and who care nothing that the products and services they supply are harming millions of children and young people across the world. So, the Chronicle fully supports the smartphone-free campaign led by Claire Ferniehow. Until now, many parents felt helpless against the onslaught and power of social media. Now, thanks to Claire and others' efforts, more and more are feeling that they can take back some control of their children's lives. Older readers of the Chronicle might well argue that too many parents have given in to pester power from their children and that they should just say, no, you can't have a smartphone. That is easier said than done. So congratulations to the schools across the country, the county, who are saying that children under the age of 11 years should not have these phones. The campaign argues that at 14 is the right age for smartphones and 16 for access to social media. As we report, by September 2026, 140 schools across Hampshire would have signed up. Only 140? There is no reason why all primary schools should not stand shoulder to shoulder with their parents and take a stand on this. Anecdotal evidence is that the average age for children to get a smartphone is now just 9 years of age. In many ways, this is a form of child neglect. Too many parents are happy for their young children to have such phones because it keeps them occupied. Perhaps they should try engaging with their kids, talking to them, playing with them, helping them to learn how to read, showing them that they are beloved and cherished, because there is a real risk that down the line their children will grow up into lonely, maladjusted, unhappy young adults. What is depressing is those parents are the ones who will not support the campaign.
Thank you, Noel. Now, we now have the opinion piece, which is written this week by Joanna Lewis. It's called Leaving Home for First Time. This week, I'm running a pilot training scheme for students who've returned from long periods away on fieldwork but need to knuckle down. It can be difficult readjusting to the discipline of deadlines, the pressures of expectations, and the challenges of working unsupervised for long periods of time, especially during the summer. If you work from home, that might strike a chord. How many of us appreciate the luxury of working from home but so often can't quite get on with our tasks? There's the fridge challenge to overcome first. You can only start work after you've tested everything on the top shelf. Or suddenly you become very interested in plumping up all the cushions before logging on, or going online and ordering more. Who also hears the call for the dry cleaners? Good to get those winter coats out ready in a heat wave. Yet, even before the internet messed up with our minds, I remember the challenges of returning to work after a break or going to university. I was totally naive about what life would be like in comparison to life in a small village. I was lucky not to have been thrown out as the wheels nearly came off. From experience and from talking to my students, there are at least three important areas for young people to prepare for when leaving home for the first time, whether it's for university, college, training, or starting a new job. Using the rest of the summer to tackle areas where you feel that you might struggle would be time well spent rather than stressing. One of the overlooked challenges students can face is loneliness and isolation. You're probably going to need some strategies to be social. Sociability is not a given, even if you're not particularly shy. Handheld phones are often how we connect with others these days. Real-time, face-to-face is extra daunting for many young people, but you must get beyond the awkwardness. One strategy, especially if, like me, you weren't good at cooking, is to make sure you've got some easy recipes that you could knock up. Meals that won't kill you preparing them or put everyone in the hospital. Practice the ultimate pasta dish chili con carne or curry, learn how to do that for 8 people on a budget. Extra brownie points for a vegetarian option. That's a surefire way to make friends in your dorm or flat. Suggest a weekly communal meal. Another important adjustment, living away from home for the first time, especially if you're female, is around strategy. Sadly, in the world we live in, violence in the everyday is rocketing. Attacks on women and on public transport are at a record high. There won't be the taxi of mum or dad or instant reliable group of male or female friends who see each other home no matter what. Planning for an immediate safety net is important for when you go out to party or work late in the lab or library. Signing up for self-defence lessons, remembering to take an alarm with you, attending all the inductions on safety and checking police advice locally are all musts. Many of my female students in London never accept drinks from strangers. They drink alcohol at home rather than risk spiking. Finally, don't leave it too long before remembering that ultimately you have moved away to work. As soon as possible, that should dominate your daily routine and planning. Use a weekly or monthly term planner. Even if it's not cool, stick one up on your wall. Set your alarm and get up. Give it 6 months to settle. If during that time you're not motivated, talk to people about how you feel. Get advice from those who know you and from experts where you are based. The sooner issues are addressed, the easier they are to fix. Maybe there's a different path for you, and that's okay. Right, we now go on to Belgarum, starting with Heather, please.
Belgarum, an alternative look at the news, and it's on display in the House of Lords. And there's a charming picture of a very, very chaotic-looking guy who is a sculptor. And the other photograph is of his latest piece that's gone on display in the House of Lords. An artist and former Winchester School of Art student now has his work showcased in the House of Lords. After graduating in 1995, Robert Truscott studied in St. Petersburg and now has a studio in Matley's Yard in Wharf Hill. With a passion for local wildlife, Robert is also interested in sculpting historical figures, like his most recent cast bronze portrait of former Ulster Unionist leader David Trimble. The project took a year to complete. Commissioned by a member of the House of Lords, Lord Bew, who has an extensive knowledge of Irish history, and included also in this commitment was a group of Trimble's friends and family. Mr. Truscott said, "It's quite roundabout. David Campbell, who was Trimble's secretary, bought my sculpture of Frederick Parlus after showing Trimble my work, and he had liked it. They thought of me to make a commemorative portrait in bronze for the House of Lords collection after he'd passed away. Since there already is one in Ireland, they wished for a younger version, the way he appeared during the Good Friday Agreement of 1998. One sculpture leads to another, I suppose." One of his many pieces, a drawing of a swan, is on show at the Wickham Arms. And you can also find his work online at www.robtruscott.co.uk.
Thank you, Heather Jane. Your other Belgarum story,
and the other
please.
One is stunning 57-item sculpture trail. Sculptors were invited to design bespoke sculptures and installations inspired by locations around the gardens of Houghton Lodge. The trail, exploring all areas of the gardens, features 57 individual pieces from 16 artists. Sculptor Zoe Wilson said, "Sarah, the curator, and I brought all of the artists together. We all have a connection with one another, as well as Houghton Lodge and the surrounding gardens. I love garden sculpture in a natural setting. It's a lovely sign-off to display a final piece in a setting as beautiful as the sculpture itself. Houghton Lodge's sculpture trail is running across the summer until September the 30th. And there is a lovely picture of Zoe with her piece, a vector, a very small sculpture, but she's under an absolutely beautiful arch covered in pink roses in Houghton Lodge.
Thank you, Jane. So one or two things happening locally that you may be interested in. Saturday the 12th, that's tomorrow to us here, there's a jazz piano concert with Robert Carter. That is at the United Church in Jury Street, Winchester. Starts at 7:30 p.m. Friday the 18th, Gentle Harry's Farm, presented by the Rude Mechanical Theatre Company. That is at Gentle Harry's Farm, Old Rectory Garden, Droxford. Going on Saturday the 26th of July, Bracefield Village Hall Market. That starts at 10:30 a.m. Also on Saturday the 26th, Georgian Style and Society Guided Walking Tour, looking around Winchester. That starts at 2:30 from the Visitor Information Centre. Thursday the 31st of July is the Wickham Festival. I think that runs for 4 days. Yes, it does. Friday the 1st of August, Southampton Club Classics Orchestra. That is a 24-piece classics orchestra which takes you on a musical journey through 20 years of iconic dance anthems. And lastly, Sunday the 3rd of August, there's a medieval Jewish Winchester guided walking tour. That starts at 1:30, once again, from the Visitor Information Centre in the centre of Winchester. Well, before we go on to items of general news, let's have a look at the lighting up times for the coming week. The sun, if there is any, and there probably will rise about 5 a.m. and set again at about 9:15 p.m. So, Heather, can we have your first item of news, please?
Thank you. Influencers are blamed over pets' mutilation. A bill aimed at eradicating pet mutilation in the United Kingdom is one step away from becoming law. The Private Members Bill, led by Liberal Democrat MP Danny Chambers, was passed by the Commons on Friday, July the 4th, and will now be considered by the Lords. The government has backed the bill, which is set to transform animal welfare if given final approval. The bill aims to put an end to puppy smuggling, a dangerous and illegal activity that brings in pets who have undergone unnecessary mutilations. And there's a smiley picture of Danny Chambers himself at Battersea Dogs and Cats Home with somebody with him and a dog in front of him. He's not actually smiling, the dog, but he looks pretty comfortable. It will also deal with the growing concern over the spread of diseases associated with importing pets. Proposed provisions in the bill include banning the import of pets with cropped ears or those that are heavily pregnant. The practice of ear cropping is already illegal in the UK and is considered a cruel and unnecessary aesthetic modification that can cause severe harm and infections. Winchester's MP, who tabled the Animal Welfare Import of Dogs, Cats and Ferrets Bill, told the Commons, "One reason that there is such an interest in dogs with cropped ears is that a lot of influencers on Instagram and other social media platforms pose with these dogs or show they have these new dogs with cropped ears. Many people are not even aware that this is a mutilation. They think it's how the dog's ears normally look, and it drives a demand for dogs that look like this." Dr. Chambers pointed out how this bill would close the import loophole, making it impossible to legally obtain pets with such mutilations in the United Kingdom, which would help to end these cruel practices that pose dangers to the well-being of pets. Many imported dogs are heavily pregnant or very young, and are rarely checked for diseases like rabies, and the illegal importation poses severe health risks to both the smuggled dogs and the animals already living in the United Kingdom. Dr. Chambers said, "I am so proud that this bill has passed in the Commons. It will stop pet mutilation in Britain once and for all. This legislation will transform animal welfare in the United Kingdom and eradicate cruel practices that should have been wiped out years ago. We are now one crucial step closer to closing the loopholes that allow that kind of animal abuse to happen in this country. Mutilated animals can face horrendous injuries, infections, and psychological issues, which vets like myself see each and every day. Even more worryingly, the illegal smuggling of puppies has long caused serious public health problems and could be brought, and diseases can be brought back into the United Kingdom. This bill will curb those concerns, stamping out savage practices that endanger animals everywhere."
Thank you. Heather Noel, please.
70 mice released in conservation project. 70 harvest mice have been released into the wild as part of an ongoing conservation project in Hampshire. The harvest mice, bred at New Forest Wildlife Park, were released on Saturday, June 28th, as part of a wider reintroduction effort in Ealing, led by Ealing Wildlife Group. Jason Palmer, curator of collections at New Forest Wildlife Park, said, "It was a privilege to be able to attend the release of 70 of our harvest mice back to the wild at Yeadingbrook Meadows." Yeadingbrook? Yeadingbrook. "Giving Britain's smallest native rodent a fighting chance. We are proud to be part of this ongoing project run by Ealing Wildlife Group, supporting the reintroduction of harvest mice to the area as part of a larger habitat and wildlife restoration project. We're not just releasing animals. Together, we are rebuilding entire ecosystems and proving that local conservation efforts can make a real difference. The release forms part of an ongoing partnership between the Wildlife Park and Ealing Wildlife Group, which has so far seen a total of 200 mice returned to the wild. The project aims to restore the harvest mouse populations and support biodiversity recovery in the Ealing area. Monitoring of previous releases shows that mice are establishing themselves successfully. Harvest mice have suffered significant declines across the UK due to habitat loss, making targeted reintroduction schemes like this essential for their survival. The project highlights the value of collaboration between wildlife organisations, conservationists and community groups. Ealing Wildlife Group hopes the public will take an interest in the work and support further conservation efforts."
Thank you. Noel Jane, please.
Here we have, "Get ready to rock out at school summer show." A rock school is marking 21 years of empowering young people through music. Winnell Rock School, WRS, is celebrating more than two decades of providing supportive, accessible, inclusive, fun and educational music-making opportunities with its annual summer show. The event at the Theatre Royal Winchester on Tuesday, July the 15th, will showcase original songs and cover performances by 21 youngsters. The Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Sudhakar Achwal, recently visited the school to see the performers rehearse. Councillor Achwal said, "It was truly inspiring to see the group in action, enthusiastic young people full of energy, talent and a real eagerness to learn. It was clear how much effort and passion has gone into nurturing their musical skills. Your dedicated team has clearly achieved something very special. It's heartening to see the positive impact you're making on these young lives through music. I have no doubt that the upcoming concert at the Theatre Royal in Winchester will be a great success based on what I saw tonight. It may well be your best yet." Winnell Rock School offers young people the chance to develop their musical abilities through long-term weekly band workshops. Since it launched in 2004, more than 300 young people have taken part in its core programme, while many others have benefited from short-term schemes and one-off sessions. In the past 2 years alone, Youth Music Foundation grant enabled the school to deliver more than 200 workshops involving more than 300 participants. The summer show is open to the public, with tickets available on a pay-what-you-can basis starting from £6. Led by music leader Chris Redmond, the event promises to be a lively community celebration. Winnell Rock School expects to have funding in place to continue its core workshops until 2026, but will be seeking new grants and partnerships to sustain its work further. And this is accompanied by a delightful photograph of all the Winnell Rock School students with their drums and guitars and the music in front of them and looking delighted to be playing. And at the front is, of course, the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Sudhakar Achwal, with a guitar that he looks as if he knows how to play. And he visited the Rock School to see these performers in rehearsal. And in fact, on the front of the drum, it says, Make Music Day, UK.
Thank you, Jane. My piece is headed Fury as Workmen Begin Digging Next to House. A woman was left angry and frustrated after workmen arrived and began digging inches from her Winchester property. Julia Klein, who bought and renovated the house on the corner of North Walls and Upper Brook Street 5 years ago, says she heard the first she heard about the work to upgrade an underground electricity link box was when a group of workmen arrived and began digging. The house, while not officially listed, is recognisable for its big Nestle advert from when it used to be a sweet shop. Julia, a property developer, said she was not opposed to the work, provided the proper structural assessments had been carried out and that she had been given sufficient notice and time to review them. She said that neither she nor any of her immediate neighbours had received any notification of the work by contractors Enervio on behalf of SSEN. Julia said, there's no way that they are putting a digger bucket 4 inches from my foundations without me seeing a risk assessment with my property named on it. Tensions rose when work began on Monday, July the 7th, prompting the workmen to call the police, who arrived to mediate. Neighbours also came out of their houses, with one commenting that her house was vibrating. Work was expected to continue overnight until July the 11th, with a permit agreed by the County Council on June the 17th. Workmen at the site said they were carrying out instructions and expected the work from 6 p.m. until around 1 a.m. each day to complete the upgrade outside of busy times to avoid traffic disruption. The first they had done in the city to prevent power cuts and cope with increased demand. A spokesperson for SSEN said, we can confirm that works at the junction of Upper Brook Street and North Walls through its contractor, Enervio, were halted on the evening of Monday, July the 7th, after a member of the public accessed the area behind the safety barrier. These works to replace the link box are essential to maintain a safe and reliable power source to local homes and businesses, with the local authority requesting that the works are carried out between 7 p.m. and 6 a.m. 20 properties within the locale of the works were notified by letter drop ahead of the engineers attending to carry out the replacement of the link box. A police spokesman said, we were called at 8:26 p.m. on Monday, July the 7th, to a dispute between a member of the public and workmen on Upper Brook Street. Officers attended and spoke to both parties. No criminal offences were identified. And there is a photograph of Julia Klein outside her house in Upper Brook Street, pointing at the offending digger, digging away at the foundations close to her house, and she is looking very grumpy. Heather, please.
More than £8,000 fraudulently claimed by council staff. More than £8,000 has been fraudulently claimed by County Council staff members, resulting in police investigations and dismissals. The annual internal audit conclusion 2024 to 2025 report has revealed that at the end of 2023 to 24, several investigations into fraud committed by Hampshire County Council staff members were opened. These related to the loss of £1,200 in cash from the educational setting, which was not reported by the council, resulting in a police referral and the dismissal of an employee. The second case involved fraudulent travel and expense claims, as well as the personal use of hired vehicles by an employee. According to the council, this defrauded them of £5,500. After the investigation, the employee was dismissed, although the Crown Prosecution Service decided not to prosecute the person involved. Two investigations were also carried out into the use of procurement cards by employees. These actions were found not to be fraudulent, but were a consequence of poor record-keeping. Another case about an employee making overtime claims of £1,400 resulted in a disciplinary process following the investigation. In consequence, that person is no longer employed by the local authority. A spokesperson for Hampshire County Council said, "We have robust and well-established processes in place to identify and investigate any incidences of suspected fraud by staff."
Thank you, Heather. Noel, please.
Encouraging respect in our neighbourhood. A new campaign is encouraging residents to take small actions that could make a big difference in their community. Winnall Forum, a grassroots community group based on the estate, has launched Love Winnall to inspire people to help build a cleaner, kinder and more connected place to live. The campaign is centred around four key principles: litter-free living, offering help to neighbours, valuing and respecting where you live, and engaging with the forum and other community projects. Sam Feltham, chair of the Winnall Forum, said, "We believe that living in a nicer place leads to a nicer life. Love Winnall is about empowering residents to take ownership of where we live through simple acts of kindness and working together. The campaign encourages residents to use the nearby bins for all rubbish, including dog waste, and to keep streets and green spaces clean. It also calls on neighbours to look out for one another, helping with shopping or checking in on somebody who lives alone. The forum meets every 2 months at the Winnall Community Centre and brings together residents, councillors and community leaders to discuss issues and ideas that matter most to the people in Winnall. These meetings offer a direct line to decision makers and to serve as a platform for a real community influence. The forum describes itself as a long-standing connector between residents and local authorities and believes that by attending meetings and taking part in projects, everyone can help shape Winnall's future. Each of the campaign's four pillars is designed to be practical and achievable for everyone. The litter-free principle reminds residents to use the bins provided, while Offer to Help Your Neighbours encourages even the smallest acts of kindness. Value and Respect Where We Live is about recognising the strength and vibrancy of the community, and Engage with the Forum and Community Projects calls on residents to take a more active role in shaping the neighbourhood. The Forum is encouraging all residents to sign up to its email list to stay updated on meetings and local projects. Anyone interested in getting involved or learning more can visit the Winnall Forum website. And there's a picture of part of the street in Winnall with a big poster on a lamppost saying, "Love Winnall," with a little family in it. It's nice.
Thank you, Noel. Jane, please.
Here we have more than 2,000 prayers hanging in new art installation. an art installation consisting of more than 2,000 cardboard creatures has been hung in Winchester Cathedral. Adorned with handwritten prayers, the installation is located in the North Transept. The art installation is the creation by schoolchildren in Hampshire and East Dorset from more than 100 church schools in the Diocese of Winchester, with more than 150 ribbons used to accommodate each prayer. The installation took 2 days to put up and required the use of a cherry picker. Annual Year 6 Leavers Celebration Days were held at the Cathedral for pupils from church schools spanning from Basingstoke to Bournemouth. The Bishop of Southampton, the Right Reverend Rhiannon King, said, "It's been so wonderful to have schools from all over the Winchester Diocese, all over Hampshire and East Dorset, come to mark the end of their time in primary school. That transition, which I think is really important for them." The artwork was designed by the Diocese of Winchester's education team as part of this year's schools project called Try Wonder, and will be on display until Monday, September the 8th. And this is accompanied by a beautiful large photograph of hundreds of strings hanging down in the cathedral, all filled with cardboard creatures of all sorts, birds, fish, butterflies, foxes, everything that you can possibly imagine, dogs, cats, all painted beautifully by the children, and then with a prayer, squirrels, I've just seen a squirrel, with a prayer written on the back. And in the background, glowing behind them, are two of the beautiful stained glass windows in the cathedral.
Thank you, Jane. Gold Award for Supporting Domestic Abuse Victims. Winchester City Council has been awarded gold accreditation for its work in supporting victims of domestic abuse. The recognition comes from the Domestic Abuse Housing Alliance, DAHA, which awarded the council its highest honour following an assessment of how housing services respond to domestic abuse. Since August 2023, the council has undertaken a programme of improvements, embedding a trauma-informed and victim-centre approach. Liberty Spencer, DAHA Regional Lead South, said the Domestic Abuse Housing Alliance is proud to announce that Winchester City Council has officially achieved DAHA accreditation, recognising its dedication to improving the housing sector's response to domestic abuse and placing the needs and safety of survivors at the heart of its work. This accreditation marks a significant milestone for the council, reflecting strong progress in areas such as staff training, survivor support, partnership working, and safeguarding practices across its housing services. We were particularly impressed by the council's commitment to providing a tailored, trauma-informed response and by the way in which the voices of survivors have been consistently centred throughout their approach. The council has prioritised staff training and established a network of domestic abuse champions within the organisation to support colleagues and residents. Heather, please.
Parliament visit brings democracy to life for kids. A visit to Parliament has brought democracy to life for a group of Hampshire pupils. Year 5 and 6 pupils from Itchen Abbas Primary School travelled to London for a tour of Parliament and a meeting with their MP Danny Chambers, who represents Winchester. The trip was organised following an invitation from Dr Chambers, who met the pupils in Westminster and spoke to them about his role and the workings of Parliament. Dr Chambers said, "It was absolutely fantastic to meet with the pupils from Itchen Abbas in Parliament. I think it's really important for young people to learn about how our democracy works and get thinking about how our laws get made. Children are our future." So it was delightful to see how enthusiastic and interested they were in learning. I'd encourage other schools around Winchester and the Meon Valley to arrange a visit to Parliament and get young people interested in how our country is run. My team and I will always be happy to help arrange visits for schools, so please do get in touch. During the visit, pupils learned about the history and function of the Houses of Parliament and also had the chance to watch the Speaker's procession and hear stories about the building, including how the wood in Westminster Hall came from the Winchester area. Following the tour, the group walked to Downing Street and Horse Guards Parade, soaking up the atmosphere and enjoying street performances along the way. Dr. Chambers had previously visited Itchen Abas Primary School to discuss the challenges facing small rural schools. Head teacher Rob Bogan spoke with him about funding for free school meals and breakfast clubs. Dr. Chambers later raised the issue of school meals funding in Parliament before the government announced plans to expand the free school meals programme. And there is a picture of three rows of smiling kids in their smart school uniforms, all with their little identification tags to give them entrance into Westminster. They're accompanying adults also wearing the tags, and they're almost all of them smiling.
Thank you, Heather. Noel, please.
Scheme for safer cycling and walking is welcomed. A new national effort could help make streets safer for walking and cycling has been welcomed by a council chief. Martin Todd, leader of Winchester City Council, has welcomed a cross-party proposal from 12 regional mayors to create a national active travel network. The network, planned to launch this autumn, will include 3,500 miles of safe routes connecting homes, schools, town centres and transport hubs. The plan includes measures such as safer crossings and restricted motor traffic during school drop-offs and picking up times. Sorry, that's drop-off and picking up times. Councillor Todd said this is exactly the kind of change we need in Hampshire and the Solent if we get a major, if we get a mayor next year. Hampshire County Council has really dragged its feet in making our streets safer for cyclists and pedestrians, with the highest number of cyclists and the second highest number of pedestrians killed or seriously injured in the government's most recent figures compared to all the other councils in the South East. It's time to get serious about making our streets safer. The initiative has been developed in partnership with Active Travel England and has been endorsed by England's Chief Medical Officer Chris Whitty. Mr. Whitty has highlighted the potential for the scheme to improve public health for around 20 million people. National Active Travel Commissioner and former Olympic cyclist Chris Boardman said focusing on children's safety makes the proposal both publicly and politically popular.
Thank you, Noel. Jane, please.
Here we have a wonderful poetry festival is launched. A room filled with poets, funders and supporters of one of the city's best cultural events marked the launch of this year's Winchester Poetry Festival. In what was the hottest ticket in town, quite literally, the assembled crowd gathered on Monday, June the 30th, upstairs at the Royal Inn in full flood, the Railway Inn, to hear from organisers and enjoy poetry and performance. This year, the festival is set to revisit the classics, with 24 events already open for bookings, all focused on the theme. Poets expected to attend include Pulitzer Prize winner Diane Zeus, Forward Prize winners Mona Arshie and Luke Kennard, and Triple T.S. Eliot Prize shortlisted poet Fiona Benson. The festival will also feature a musical poetry performance, Take Flight by Roy McFarlane, and world-class vocalist and composer Randolph Matthews. Artistic director Claire Pollard said, "I am a bookworm. In other countries, we are apparently known as book moths, book weevils, library mice, reading rats, and ink drinkers. To me, reading is life. Libraries and literary festivals and library-adjacent literary festivals like the Winchester Poetry Festival are my idea of a great time. I'm honoured to have been able to curate this year's programme, and our theme, Revisiting the Classics, is a wonderful excuse to indulge in books about books and poems about poems. The programme is designed to celebrate literary giants such as Jane Austen, John Keats, Shakespeare, Rambo, Marvel, ancient Greek playwrights, Bing Jin and Adrian Rich. There will be a séance by the Dead Women Poets Society, a children's workshop based on medieval riddles and alliterative verse, and contemporary poets like Richard Scott, Mona Arshi, Luke Kennard and Diane Zeus will draw inspiration from the classics. Miss Pollard added, there should be something for every ink drinker. At the launch, Hampshire's poet laureate Damien Kelly Basher performed. He said, it is wonderful. The Poetry Festival is about inviting people to come and have fun with writing, reading and performing poetry. It is about starting early. We have young poets, and it is about people coming together to enjoy words, whatever their language or background. The festival, which also recently won the Creative and Cultural Award at this year's Winchester Business Excellent Awards, will be held at the Arc Winchester from October the 10th to the 12th. And there is a lovely feature of them upstairs at the railway in the dark with a few lights, all sitting round and standing, looking very, very happy to be discussing poetry. And it is time, perhaps, for any of us to start writing a poem which could be contributed.
Thank you, Jane. Music Club's Centenary Celebration. Winchester Music Club celebrated its centenary with the return of composer Bob Chilcott. Bob conducted Winchester Philharmonic Choir Come and Sing workshop on June the 14th, reprising his involvement from their 75th anniversary. The event saw the choir under Bob's baton rendering the Canticles of Light, a piece he composed and conducted for the choir's 75th anniversary. A little jazz mass was also performed. Bob's lifelong dedication to choral music has seen him direct choirs in more than 30 countries. Since 1997, he has worked as a full-time composer and conductor. To mark the end of the workshop, the choir delivered a run-through performance of both compositions, followed by a centenary celebration reception with champagne and canapés. Heather, please.
Paramedics' crucial role. Paramedics are now a crucial part of GP practice teams in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. Traditionally known for emergency care, paramedics have become an integral part of the multi-professional GP setup. Their training allows them to quickly and thoroughly assess a patient's condition and judge the most immediate actions or treatments required. In their daily roles, paramedics triage and see patients needing urgent face-to-face, same-day appointments and signpost them to appropriate services. They carry out investigations, including blood tests, undertake home visits to those who are housebound, and arrange patient referrals. Their pre-hospital care background means they are used to dealing with a variety of health conditions, ranging from minor injuries to severe illnesses like asthma and heart attacks. David Tyler, a trainee advanced clinical practitioner and paramedic based in a general practice in Hampshire, said, I diagnose and treat a variety of health conditions and can also visit patients at home if they are unable to make it into the practice. I've been working as a paramedic in a GP practice for the last 2 years. It's a job I really enjoy. My training to help patients in an emergency, along with experience working in the community, really helps in my role in a GP practice, as I can quickly assess the needs of each patient and can quickly decide on what care is needed.
Thank you, Heather. Noel, please.
Something's brewing outside the Brooks, and it's a big picture of this Oko's new tuk-tuk. Don't know what on earth that is. It's a van of some sort.
It's,
sorry?
It's literally just down there.
Oh, right.
Opposite the Hampshire Chronicle studio.
Well, there's a picture of Laura Morris in charge of OCO's new tuk-tuk. Yeah. I should have a look at it as we go.
Yeah.
OCO's new eco-friendly tuk-tuk is set up its new location outside the Brooks. Previewing the upcoming addition in a unit inside the Brooks, OCO set up its new tuk-tuk. Is that tuk-tuk or tuk-tuk?
Tuk-tuk.
Mm-hmm. On Thursday, July the 3rd, allowing Winchester residents to get a taste of what's to come. The fully electric vehicle will be positioned outside the shopping centre from Wednesday to Sunday, offering a variety of hand-roasted coffee, as well as brownies and cookies. Cookies means biscuits. Laura Morris, that's the Americanism, Laura Morris, tuk-tuk supervisor, said, "It's been good, we had a bit of a slow start yesterday, because we had just opened and people already have their regular coffee shops in town. But more people are starting to recognise us being here, which is good. A lady approached me yesterday and said it was great as she had somewhere she could get a coffee as she waited for the bus. OCO's new business venture will remain in its position unless it is being booked for events or festivals."
Thank you, Noel. Jane, please.
Here we have Ale and Engines at Heritage Railway event. Diesel engines and real ale will take centre stage at a Heritage Rail event this weekend. The Watercress Line's Diesel Gala will run from Friday, July the 11th to Sunday, July the 13th, offering 3 days of heritage diesel locomotives, hands-on experiences, and for the first time, a real ale and cider festival. Rebecca Daly, Chief Executive of the Watercress Line, said, "This year's Diesel Gala promises to be one of our most exciting yet, with iconic visiting diesel locomotives, a brand new real ale and cider festival, and a real celebration of railway heritage. We're especially proud to pay tribute to the team from Plymouth's Lara Depot, whose dedication helped preserve so much of what visitors will enjoy. Whether you're a heritage railway enthusiast or just looking for a memorable day out, there's something for everyone to discover and enjoy. The event will feature an intensive running timetable along the scenic heritage line, powered by a mix of home fleet locomotives and 6 visiting engines. Highlights include the classic 500 Thunderer, which will run on Saturday only, as well as the Class 52... D1015 Western Champion, Class 42 D821 Greyhound, and the Class 46 46045. A Class 70 and Class 66 will also appear, although their exact identities are yet to be announced.
Thank you, Jane. Old school site could become a kids' home. A secondary school in Hampshire could be converted into a children's home after its closure. The plan for Henry Court Community College in Fareham follows a similar plan for Stubbington Study Centre, mooted last year but shelved after protests. Hampshire County Council has now come up with an alternative for its much-needed children's home facility, identifying the school as a potential suitable alternative when it closes in 2 years' time. A review concluded that Henry Court would be the most viable location for the proposed new secure children's home based on the requirements of the Department for Education. The proposal involves the conversion of the school into an essential home resource for the local and national authorities, as it will be empty in August 2027 when it moves to the new North Whiteley Secondary School. Next week, that is July the 8th, County Council Cabinet members will decide what to do. Councillor Nick Adams-King, leader of the council, said, "To continue to meet demand and the increasingly complex needs of our most vulnerable children, it is clear that we now need a new and larger specialist children's home offering the very best modern facilities. Without this, children in our care in the future may need to move much further away from their homes and families to access suitable support and at a significantly greater cost." Heather, please.
still with Hampshire County Council, which is appointing a new chief executive. Hampshire County Council is set to confirm the appointment of its next chief executive. Gary Westbrook, currently its deputy chief executive and director of Hampshire 2050, has been recommended for the role by a cross-party member appointment panel after a national recruitment process. Subject to formal approval by full council on July the 17th, Mr. Westbrook will become acting chief executive from July the 19th and officially take on the role as head of paid service from August the 4th. Councillor Nick Adams-King, leader of Hampshire County Council, said Gary Westbrook brings a wealth of experience, deep knowledge of the organisation and a strong record of leadership. With 15 years of service to the County Council, his strategic insight and commitment to public service were evident throughout the appointment process. I am confident that Gary is the right person to lead the organisation into the future.
Thank you. Heather Knoll, please.
Annie, set to be staged. A popular youth theatre company is bringing classic musical to Winchester. Annie will be performed by the talented young cast of Rare Productions, a well-known youth musical theatre company. The classic tale from the 1930s follows the adventures of the brave little orphan Annie as she searches for her parents while outwitting the evil plans of Miss Hannigan, the cruel director of her orphanage. In her journey, Annie interacts with President Franklin Delano Roosevelt and finds herself in the home of billionaire Oliver Warbucks, finding a new family. The production will hit the Winchester stage on Thursday, July 31st at 7:30 p.m. Further performances will take place on Friday, August the 1st at 7:30, and two shows on Saturday, August the 2nd at 2 p.m. and 6:30 p.m. Rare Productions is a company dedicated to nurturing talent and providing young people aged 8 to 21 with experience in full-scale musical productions in professional theatres throughout the United Kingdom. The organisation promotes teamwork and skill learning alongside performance guaranteeing a fulfilling experience for the cast members.
Thank you. Noel Jane, please.
And here we have petitioners launched tonight, hero bus driver. A petition has been launched tonight, a bus driver who crashed into a river. The driver of the Blue Star College 607 bus carrying 19 Barton Peveril College students was hospitalised with serious injuries after the vehicle lost control and plunged into the River Itchen on June the 26th. A teenage girl was also seriously injured while 15 other passengers suffered minor injuries. The bus driver reportedly told a witness that the accelerator was jammed. Now, a petition started by Harry Burgess calls for the driver to receive recognition for his actions. Mr. Burgess said, "Multiple lives could have been lost had the bus continued on its rampage, but the anonymous driver thought quickly and did the only thing that made sense, driving his bus into the River Itchen and saving many lives in the process. Let's finally come together as a country and do something right for a change." The 607 bus carried students from Knowle, Wickham, Shedfield, Waltham Chase, Bishops Waltham, Lower Upham and Ferry. The petition on change.org has received 74 signatures so far.
Thank you, Jane. Well, I'm sorry to say that's all we have for you this week. Before we go, another reminder that if you have any problems with your recording, the contact number is on the key fob attached to the memory stick. Now, would you please put the memory stick and the address label back in the wallet when you finish with it and return it to us as soon as possible. Well, thanks to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition, and of course, many thanks to the readers, Heather.
Goodbye.
Noel.
Goodbye.
Jane.
Goodbye.
And from me, Peter. Until next time, goodbye.